Hello, my name is Chip Ling, and you are listening to Total EM. We are back again with an EMID podcast with Patrick Bafuma. This time he is interviewing Dr. John Perkins from the Carilion Clinic in Virginia, and they are talking about whether or not infectious disease can potentially count as a cardiac risk factor. Apologies in advance for the audio, but now let's move on to the podcast.
I'm part of the faculty at Virginia Tech Carilion School of Medicine. So it's a partnership between Virginia Tech and Carilion Clinic, which is a nonprofit hospital system.
So how'd you get involved in infectious disease?
So I have a background in internal medicine as well as emergency medicine. So I'm double boarded. I finished residency in 2007 at the University of Maryland, and I worked in the community for 5 years up in North Baltimore. And at the time I was 50-50. 50% community emergency medicine and 50% inpatient medicine, mostly teaching with the internal medicine residency up there. And then I moved down to Virginia Tech in 2012.
I liked Baltimore. Baltimore's really enjoyable.
Yeah, it's changed a lot in the past 20 years. It's become quite a nice town.
Yeah, that's. I haven't been there in probably 5 or 10 years, but I enjoy a good blue-collar town. All right, so Dr. Perkins, I've had a question that I've recently started asking my patients, and essentially I ask them if they've been sick lately. And I found that that has been a little bit more of a risk factor for various cardiovascular diseases. What are your thoughts on this?
It's a great question to ask, especially for patients that are coming in that may have cardiovascular risk factors or older patients, especially those who are coming in with more nebulous complaints. If you think about recent illness, influenza, pneumonia, upper respiratory infection as a risk factor for myocardial infarction, it really applies to asking broader questions when people come in a week to 2 weeks after that illness and they have nebulous complaints. Because if they come in complaining of chest pain, they're going to get a workup either way. It really needs to be on your radar when they come back in 3 or 4 days and they said, you know, I just had the flu, but now I come in, I have no energy, I'm feeling terrible, I'm a little short of breath. And that's really where it comes onto your radar of like, did they have a cardiac event in the context of a recent influenza-like illness or other infection?
So you mentioned flu, you mentioned URI. Is there a difference between, say, you know, a documented influenza A positive patient versus someone who had a URI versus the hospitalized septic patient?
If you referring to the New England Journal of Medicine article from this year by Musher et al, a really interesting point that they make, which makes a lot of intuitive sense when you think about the pathophysiology of this, and basically stratifying it by the level of infection and how sick the person was. So somebody who is septic is much more likely to have a secondary coronary event than somebody who has an upper respiratory illness. And so influenza would fall in that category somewhere. Bacterial pneumonia would fall into that category. The sicker they are, the more inflammatory process they have going on, the more likely they are to set off an underlying coronary event, which makes a lot of sense if you think back to the pathophysiology of coronary plaques, where there are inflammatory debris contained in a plaque and exposure of that inflammatory debris to an inflammatory setting, which would be folks that are having infectious illness, makes a lot of sense. And so, and that inflammation continues beyond the time when they're acutely ill.
Is there a particular timeline that you're looking for? Is it like just the first few days? Is it several weeks?
So the literature would say that 7 days should probably be the number in your head. If you look at their timeline, they followed these patients out for years. There's a ton of literature about sepsis patients and mortality years after an episode of sepsis. And mortality goes up, and part of that is cardiovascular risk. So there is an associated mortality after an illness, specifically sepsis, years later. That doesn't really help the practicing emergency physician. However, I would say you need something concrete, and I would say 7 days. That's, again, going back to the point you made of asking a question of, have you been ill recently in the past 7, 10 days, whatever, and just say, like, can you describe that a little bit? And just use that in your mind to kind of like, do I extend my work up a little bit and start thinking of cardiovascular pathology as the reason for your presentation?
So trying to nail you down a little bit more on this, if you have someone who maybe doesn't have your class, a ton of classical cardiovascular risk factors, maybe they're just on like metformin and maybe they're just like 50 years old, someone you would consider doing two tropes, two EKGs and sending them out for more just a vague complaint or maybe even for chest pain. If they've been sick in the last week or two, does that change your approach? Or are you still okay with doing two tropes, two EKGs, and possibly sending what would otherwise be considered a low-risk patient home?
This is a great question. And so this goes into like how we risk stratify patients in the emergency department for coronary acute coronary syndrome. And basically, various departments use the heart score. Well, the problem is this has nothing to do with the heart score. It's never meant to be factored into that. And the heart score is really asking a question about whether or not patients need provocative testing. This is separate. So this is almost like an ideal situation where you would say like, this is two tropes and two EKGs and you're done. Cause you're asking like, did they have an acute event related to their recent illness or even ongoing illness or not? And that would be sufficient. You're not talking about doing any provocative testing because that's not really the question you're asking for this patient population. So I would say two tropes and two EKGs and my threshold would go down, especially as the patient gets older and you don't really have a good explanation for why their presentation, you know, I had bronchitis last week. I was feeling great. A couple days ago, I just had zero energy and I'm coming in and I can't pinpoint it. I don't know what's going on. And I'll be like, all right, you know what? At the very least, I'm going to just make sure there wasn't a coronary event that happened in the past 7 days.
So how about that patient that they're a week out and why don't we say that they were getting better and then they got a little bit worse, but there's not a very clear secondary pneumonia. What's your approach to when do you keep them in the hospital? When are you okay with letting them go? And to what patient do those two situations apply?
So this gets trickier because now you're asking multiple questions here of the patient. You're asking, did you have a complication? Let's say that the patient had influenza. And now you're thinking like, did they have a bacterial complication after influenza? Do they have a cardiovascular complication? Or is this completely unrelated to whatever happened with their influenza? And that becomes really tricky. And that you really need to weigh in. So from the cardiovascular standpoint, I go back to like you're talking about acute events in terms of I really don't have any problem here. If you're talking about, my question is, did something happen in the past 10 days about two EKGs and two troponins? Now, again, like the history may lead you elsewhere where they say, you know what, something has really changed with my endurance in the past couple of days, and now I can't walk up a flight of stairs, and I keep getting more and more short of breath or chest pain, and you're like, all right, well, this is maybe something different, and you need much more than just two tropes and two EKGs. It goes back to these patients are more complex, especially as the older they get and the more comorbidities they get in terms of if you cannot come to a definitive etiology, then putting them in the hospital, maybe even in the OBS unit for 24 hours while you kind of let things play out is not an unreasonable approach, especially as the age increases and the comorbid factors increase as well.
Okay. So I'm going to backtrack here a little bit and looking at this, this New England Journal of Medicine article, just looking at more concrete numbers here. What actually is the increased likelihood that someone's going to have a coronary event or a cardiovascular event, you know, post-sepsis, post-flu, post-pneumonia, that sort of thing?
Well, there's the New England Journal of Medicine article talks about looking at a lot of different papers that have come out. And again, they try to emphasize the fact that it depends on how serious the illness was. And that is really going to play into the person's risk. So patient is septic, patient has bacterial pneumonia, influenza, very different from patient who has an upper respiratory infection. but none of which are zero. So there was another paper from New England Journal of Medicine that looked just specifically at like influenza, and they were saying that the risk is six times higher than the patient without influenza during that week after they have influenza, during the acute illness and the 7 days afterwards. And then everything else is graded from there. So theoretically, your patient with sepsis is going to be a slightly higher risk, and those who have an upper respiratory illness will be at slightly lower risk. So I think I would base it on like six times higher risk is certainly not insignificant. And, you know, kind of going from there, this is not, this is a very difficult subject to study because obviously a lot of this is going to be retrospective in nature and looking back and, you know, correlating between patients who were using themselves as controls and saying like you had a period where you had a year where you did not have an illness and then you had an illness and, you know, what was the likelihood of an event during that time.
All right. So in terms of, so what I'm hearing, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, from your perspective for a workup, be a little bit more concerned if someone's coming in post, or keep it on your radar if someone's coming in post-illness, but without a concern for something else going on, for strictly for coronary issues, for like an ACS rule out, two tropes, two EKGs, if you would have sent them home otherwise, you can probably still consider doing so. But if they're talking about they have exertional dyspnea or they're still terribly weak, those are people that you would tend to have a lower threshold to keep in the hospital. Does that sound about right?
So yeah, let me, if I could summarize it in this fashion. So there's two approaches here. You have the patient who you are seeing who has an influenza-like illness or any type of infectious process. And then you have the patient you're seeing at the tail end of that or even up to 7 days after that is concluded. They are at risk for an acute coronary syndrome either during the illness or up to 7 days after. And any time during that window, you need to have a much lower threshold for evaluating for acute coronary syndrome. So the patient who comes in who's 50 years old, who doesn't have a lot of risk factors, and you're like, well, clearly this is influenza, and you're going down that pathway, but at the same time, they're like, just, I feel terrible, I'm short of breath. There's no harm in sending an EKG and a troponin just to make sure there's not another piece going on. If you think about the presentation for influenza, there's going to be a ton of overlap there. It's going to make it really difficult for you to sort the two out. So almost, unless they're, you know, young, healthy, you know, 18, 20 years old, they're coming in and they're like, you have an upper respiratory infection. That's probably not reasonable to send EKG and a troponin in all of those patients. But as they get older, your threshold needs to go down further and further. So, and especially in an older patient, you know, you're talking 60s, 70s with comorbid conditions, sending an EKG and a troponin, even when they have like, you know, hey, you clearly have an influenza-like illness, I'm probably sending you home, but you never know what you're going to find if you don't start looking fairly broadly. Now, one other thing I did want to mention, and this I think is not mentioned specifically in these papers, but if you look at other papers that are very similar, they talk about risk of giving patients NSAIDs with their influenza-like illness and actually undermining the effect of their aspirin. So it's a really interesting, there's a couple papers that have been published on this about be very careful who you give NSAIDs to. And what they're talking about specifically is people who need aspirin for cardiovascular protection. So somebody comes in, they're, say, for example, 60 years old, they're a diabetic, they have previous coronary disease, and you're like, you have bronchitis. And they're saying, you know what, doc, I have terrible body aches, and I'm just sore. Can you give me something for the soreness? And it's your natural inclination to say, you know what, I'm going to send you home with some ibuprofen for symptom relief. That's the patient I say, you know what, I'm actually not going to do that. I'm going to send you home with acetaminophen, because I do not want to undermine the aspirin in the setting of the acute illness, and I put you at higher risk for acute coronary syndrome.
That's good stuff. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I think that this is very vague recollection. I remember seeing a couple of years ago, it was more sort of like case form, case report format, where they looked at like 40, 60 patients. that they had given Plavix to, sort of in the setting of critical illness. But I think it was during like one of the big influenza scares, probably like 4 or 5 years, 5, 7 years ago. And they were looking at, they were trying to make the connection that giving them Plavix during their period and shortly thereafter, that they were at lesser risk for complications and that they had better outcomes. I haven't seen much in terms of trying to have that done since, but I also haven't looked too hard. Have you seen anything to that effect?
I don't think that literature is out there. It's a very interesting question. And certainly in the New England Journal of Medicine article, they posed the question of like, what would happen if you started giving baby aspirin to these patients who have, maybe they're diabetic, maybe they're hypertensive, but they're not already on baby aspirin, and just say like, you know what, you've got the flu, for the next 14 days, take a baby aspirin. What's the risk benefit there? Unfortunately, they just left that as a question for future literature to hash out. I don't really have a recommendation one way or the other. Interesting question. I don't really know what the right answer is.
All right, that podcast is a wrap. Thanks again, Patrick, for interviewing these people as part of the EMID podcast series. Check out again in a couple of weeks when John Perkins will be back on, this time to discuss antibiotic stewardship in pediatric populations. And in the meantime, this is something I think we just at least need to consider what we should take away from this. For me, I'd like to see some more evidence, but at least I'll keep this in mind that this is a potential risk as far as when a patient comes in, could there potentially be an MI as well with this infectious process that's going on? Make sure to check out next week's podcast for sure, and that is going to be me interviewing the one, the only Ken Milne as part of the 150th podcast, and more on that later. But until next time, continue to provide total care everywhere.